Welcome aboard to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, podcast number 9. And this is Andrew Horowitz, your host. Thank you for joining me. Today, we have an exciting show, lots of topics, lots of things to talk about. We're going to be focusing on an interview that I just had with Larry Kudlow from Kudlow & Company from CNBC. We're going to talk about the subprime mess and some of the fallout from there and some of the recent announcements from the NAHB on the housing markets. We're going to tackle the issue of how to get some income from stocks and show you ways that you can get 6 or 7% from the preferred stocks that really give you a beneficial tax when you look at it from all angles. It makes a lot of sense because today you're only getting about 5% in a money market. Why not get a few extra percent and save some taxes? And finally, we're going to be talking about the area of mergers and acquisitions. I mean, it's popular as can be. Who's the next candidate for either merger, acquisition, maybe an LBO? Stick around and find out on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Let's jump right in with a discussion about preferred stocks. Preferred stocks are another way in which corporations can utilize funds that they brought in. You know, they have bonds where they pay investors to borrow money from them. They have stocks, which they bring in as equity and ownership from investors. Preferred stocks are somewhere in between. Preferred stocks really don't operate like individual stocks when the markets move up and down. They seemingly move and correlate well with bonds. They pay an interest rate that is usually commensurate with the current interest rate environment, and they usually have maturities that oftentimes are perpetual. These offerings are made because sometimes companies want to have shorter term and a little bit more flexibility when it comes to the debt that they're putting out there. Preferred stocks usually have ratings, and you can find those in a variety of different areas. One of the places we like to look is quantumonline.com, and they have a wonderful listing service for preferred stocks. Today, many of the preferred stocks you'll find out there will range anywhere from about the 5 to about the 6.5% range when it comes to high quality, AA rated or better. And you can probably sneak down and find some of them that are in about the 6.5+ range, maybe even 7% range, if you're willing to take a rating somewhere in the neighborhood of about maybe an A or an A plus, and potentially go and buy some of the international names, such as Royal Bank of Scotland or ING. And what we have found is that the beneficial nature of the dividends, and some of these only qualify, not all of them, for the 15% dividend rate, are extremely beneficial because now you just use a separate divisor to figure out what the after-tax effective rate is. So the preferred stocks that we like these days are yielding anywhere from about 6.5% to 7% when you consider the fact that when you look at an after-tax rate of return, they are very, very beneficial and tax-advantaged. Now, that compares very well with a 5% CD that you're going to get out there. So what's the downside on the preferreds? Well, you have to realize that preferreds are shares in a company. Now, of course, they don't trade like the stock itself unless there is a financial problem. If a stock goes under because of financial difficulty, you're going to have a problem with the preferred. Same thing with the stock, same thing with the bond. At the same time, what you'll find is that they have a very straight line if you chart them out overall on the volatility range. And that's because, again, they're much more akin to a bond than they are a stock. The downside is this, that obviously they trade a little bit thinner than they would if they were a stock, but then again, so does a bond. Some of them have perpetual maturities, therefore, if interest rates move up, the value of the stock will move down and vice versa. And other than that, other than the fact that maybe some liquidity issues, take a look at preferreds as a viable investment alternative to scatter throughout your portfolio to enhance the return compared to individual CDs from banks or brokerages and bonds that, or bond funds for that matter, that you may be looking at that are only yielding anywhere from 5.5 to 6, maybe on their best day. Take a look at the show notes today. We're going to have a listing of where you can find some really good preferred stocks and maybe a few that may tickle your fancy at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And when we come back, we're going to have an interview with Larry Kudlow from Kudlow & Company, talking about some areas of economics as well as an interesting view of what's going to happen in the 2008 presidential race. I'm sure you, if you know anything about Larry, you'll know where his allegiance lies and where he is leaning. So stick around on the Disciplined Investor podcast for much more. We'll be right back.
Did you know that you can receive regular updates on finance, stocks, funds, and other investment ideas? Just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com/blog and subscribe.
All right, so we're here with Larry Kudlow, of course, host of Kudlow & Company on CNBC. And I think the biggest question that I wanted to ask you was, what's happening right now with the economy? And really, you know, what's your thoughts starting off with what's going on with the market moving?
The economy is good. Tells you that there's a soft landing from the fallout of the housing and subprime mortgages. And it also tells you that corporate profits, which really drive stocks and the economy, are still coming in stronger than people might have expected.
Yeah, I agree with you there, but I still am concerned about the fact that over the last number of years, we've seen record number of stock buybacks and artificially, in a way, inflating the per share earnings. And the question I still ask is, how are these companies coming out with these numbers all the time? Where's it coming from?
Well, you have a very efficient, highly productive, lean business sector. And I think stock buybacks are, I would prefer dividend payouts, but you're getting a lot of dividend payouts too. But there's nothing wrong with share repurchases. Companies are keeping their shareholder returns high. That's a confidence builder. That's, you know, one of the reasons for the private equity buyout.
Sure.
Trend is, they're good valuations. See value. And I think on the whole, the stock market is really the key indicator right now. And frankly, has been for close to 4.5 years.
Well, clearly, I mean, looking at the stock market as an efficient mechanism to, as a predictor, if you will, I would tend to agree with that. Where's the Fed fit into all this with their current expectations and the valuation of the dollar? Do you see this dollar issue of being so low a problem moving forward?
I don't think the dollar's so low.
No?
I think the dollar's low against the euro, but it's 120 yen. That's a very good number. That's just probably right where it ought to be. Dollar has not fallen relative to the yen. Euro is a special situation, which I think a lot of people have overlooked. The euro is a function of the excellent management of the European money supply and continuous inflation fighting by Jean-Claude Trichet.
Mm-hmm.
And he is trying to, and he is actually succeeding in making the euro an alternative to the dollar. And I think that's a good thing, not a bad thing. And also the movement in Europe, both Western and Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe is becoming a very strong emerging economic and market destination with low flat tax regimes everywhere. Capital is going to Eastern Europe.
Right.
That includes Russia to some extent. But in Western Europe, which has always been the problem, a very sclerotic, government top-heavy, almost centrally planned economy,
right,
you're seeing some movement towards American-style capitalism. It's very slow movement, but certainly the election of Sarkozy helps that.
Surely.
And they have lowered corporate tax rates in several of the Western European countries. Some cases, they're lower than the U.S.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things is also the mentality of the worker there and the corporation where it's been historically a little bit higher, obviously, or a different opinion on, you know, here we're working constantly, it seems, as individuals, and they have a much different mentality of, in many of the countries, I call them the food and wine countries, of enjoying life a little bit more, and that does not always include working all the time.
Well, I think the issue there is it's not mentality, it's regulation and taxes. They're way too high.
Yeah, surely.
But my point is what I call the Sarkozy-Trichet euro shows that there's hope for the European economy and that the euro currency is becoming a viable alternative to the dollar. So you're getting a shift in the terms of trade. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means, it doesn't mean the dollar is weak. It means the euro is strong. And it takes some of the pressure off the dollar, to tell you the truth. We don't have to be everybody's single currency in the new world. So I can't find anything particularly wrong with this.
Okay, so the fact is, and summarizing your points here, the market is on a track that seems reasonable and maybe not overvalued as a lot of people are talking about. The dollar is not as undervalued as discussions have maybe led people to believe. And things really are on a really, really hitting on cylinders that are appropriate rather than concerning. Does that summarize your points?
So here? I would also include inflation. The latest inflation figures today are very good. Core inflation is actually coming back down. It puffed up a little bit in January and February, but it's come back down in March and April. Actually, in the consumer price index, durable goods, think of them as consumer goods, actually falling by about 2%. And the CPI, the core CPI, only 2.4, but on a chain weighted basis, which is somewhat like it's actually 2.0. So, despite worries about gold and commodity prices, the reality is inflation rate is just about where the Fed wants it. Interest rates are very moderate, and earnings are strong, and capitalized corporate profits, which include profits and are discounted by the 10-year treasury, make stocks look very attractive.
Well, clearly, I mean, you know, the reality is that still comparatively bonds are unattractive for most people. You know, the fact is that when you look at the bonds and you look at, you know, money markets being almost equal these days, and the fact that preferred stocks are being just maturing and being called, and the fixed income market is rather limited domestically in terms of an investment opportunity, you know, and that's at least our opinion. Let me close and ask you one further question, and we'll close with this. You know, I'm very interested in your commentary about where the whole Asian and Pacific Rim fits into our you know, economic situation, and what your future projection is on what's going to happen there with a lot of, you know, the extreme volatility we've seen lately, and obviously the fact of them consuming so much commodities, and what that's going to be, the what's going to happen in the future in that regard.
Well, I think Asian growth is terrific. I think China, India, Pac Rim, Asia looks great. I mean, they're adopting more capitalist policies, more free market policies. And there's a lot of strong growth. It's the biggest growth region in the world. Has been for quite some time. And they're also managing their currencies better. They're accumulating a lot more foreign exchange reserves, mostly dollars, which backs up their currency stability, so we won't run into what we had in the late 90s.
Right. I mean, obviously, in back then, I mean, between Mexico and the Pacific Rim, it was quite a horrendous situation. Obviously, you know, them being able to buy it at maybe not this discounted or this below price level, but at least a discount to compare it to where it was, obviously will help them. So, yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree with you with just some of the volatility of late. And, you know, it seems a bit concerning to investors, and people have been asking a lot of questions as to, you know, is it time to finally leave that area from an investment standpoint? And, you know, what can get, you know, what are the catalysts to getting better? And but yet at the same time, is the risk premium so high there right now that it's not worthwhile for me? I know you have to go. One question, obviously, what's your, 2008, what's your latest feel for, where we're going with this and who's going to be the lead candidate with everything that's been said recently? Very quickly.
I believe the Republicans will recapture the White House because of those two issues, lower taxes and a very strong defense. And I think that the GOP is going to wind up in pretty good shape on that. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if the Republicans recaptured the Senate as well as the White House. So I'm very counter-conventional on that point of view. I see the Dems making big mistakes. These things may change. I might have a different view in 6 or 12 months mm-hmm. if it's early. But at the moment, I think the Republicans are much better positioned. Much better positioned.
That's interesting. Okay, well, I think the interesting thing this time around is going to be the continuation of the interesting ways in which we see campaigns being run, with many of the candidates now having their own MySpace pages and Facebook and the various blogs. And I think now this grassroots type of action from a political standpoint is going to be very much a different structure than we've ever seen it in the 2008. That's what I'm looking for. And I think it's going to be a very interesting look at the election from a much different standpoint than we've ever seen it before.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that has any particular outcome, because that doesn't influence the outcome, because both parties are doing this. At this stage of the game, I think the Republicans have a terrific advantage over the Democrats. I think that the voters are not likely to entrust Iraq withdrawal in the context of the global war and the context of Homeland Security. I don't think they're going to want a Clinton or an Obama. I think they're going to want a McCain or a Giuliani or maybe a Romney. I think they want to do it from a position of strength and not weakness. Just pulling out is not an option.
I would tend to agree with you, although it seems to me, and maybe we travel in different circles and we talk to different people, but there is an overwhelmingly large disgust factor in the lack of understanding of what the outcome of the current, the current Iraq situation is for us as a country, and the maybe lack of understanding by people. But again, I just find it to be something that, every single day I get a question on, how is this going to pan out? And not only from an investment standpoint, and not to mention that, it's from the young and old. But again, I agree that there's going to be some pullout, and I would tend to agree that it has to come from the strength, but we'll see how that plays out. Larry Kudlow from Kudlow and Company, I believe 5 p.m. on CNBC. Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you soon, and good luck with everything.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Hey gang, Andrew Horowitz here. And do you have a question you would like us to answer on an upcoming episode? Well, all you have to do is submit that question at the blog site, which is www.thedisciplinedinvestor.com/blog. Submit your question in what we call the mailbag, and we'll be sure to answer it very, very soon. As I promised today, we're going to talk about some merger and acquisition candidates, and I have a few of them for you. Listen, first of all, realize that much of this is all based on rumor and maybe a bit of obvious a viewpoint of where things are going, what makes sense, what companies, when they come together, will create accretive transactions, although those that will be very beneficial economically. And let's just get it on the table that these are just some ideas, that these are things that you should not be jumping into right away. Be careful. These are some things that make a lot of sense right now. There's a lot of activity out there in the M&A area. We've seen this before back in the 80s, part of the 90s, and now we're seeing it again dramatically. The latest ones have skyrocketed. Some of them have failed. Some of them don't make sense at all. For example, we saw the Yahoo rumor come out a couple of weeks back, where we saw that maybe Microsoft was going to take out Yahoo or merge with Yahoo or something of that nature. The fact of the matter is that Yahoo was really having problems behind Google. Microsoft needed to really pump up what they had as their search and their overall marketing efforts. When you have a company like ValueClick that is involved in the search marketing to the end that they are, they're very similar to like a DoubleClick and a shopping company that has the ability to reach into many, many different households. It makes it extraordinarily attractive to a company like Microsoft, to a company like Yahoo, to a company like Google, where they can continue to consolidate the markets out there and they continue to bring in the overall stragglers, if you will, and consolidate a company that becomes a mega powerhouse in the area of internet-based advertising and internet-based shopping. It is considered one of the greatest areas of the next decade that will continue to progress, because if you think about what it is, it makes all the sense in the world that companies will want to have a well-rounded portfolio of shopping, of search, of pay-per-click, and any other advertising-based revenue from the internet and the internet-based world. So a company like ValueClick, which has some excellent returns, has great ratings, but at the same time is somewhere in the background of all of these, makes sense for a company like Microsoft again, or a Yahoo, or a Google, to come in and pick out this company, because it's just one more piece of noise out there that they don't need to have straggling around. If they could bring it in and even buy it at a significant premium, it makes a lot of sense. The synergies are great, particularly when it comes to the shopping area. And when you look at some of these companies that are looking to boost their shopping divisions, this is the one area they're going to want to find. So ValueClick is a great opportunity. The next one I want to talk about is The Gap. The Gap has been struggling. GPS has been struggling for a long time. It makes sense for them to finally just toss in the towel, stop fighting Aeropostale, and stop fighting the names out there like AEOS, American Eagle, and you know, they just don't have a real good management structure. They don't have the ability to really turn an excellent profit for investors. And what needs to happen right now is for somebody to come in, straighten them up, clean house, and take over, merge it into their property, and then find the synergies there. Now, who are the suitors? Obviously, we have the big names out there. But it would also make a lot of sense for like a limited brands, or maybe somebody that isn't really exactly in the same field, to pull in The Gap, because The Gap, while it has struggles, it is still an excellent brand. When you look at the synergies and the savings from property-based costs, when you look at the mall costs and real estate costs, and you look at the overhead for employees, if you can bring The Gap name and utilize that as an adjunct to your other brands, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it is really a smart move. Gap has been struggling. There's a lot of players out there would like to pick them up, and I think The Gap is ripe for it. Another one that I'll talk about is this whole issue of Palm and Rim, Research in Motion and Palm. Both of those are excellent companies. Both of those have excellent phones and devices. But you know what? Some of these players who are looking to consolidate, like Singular, now the new AT&T, and potentially Sprint, need to beef up their arsenal, because very simply, when you look at some of the things that are coming out, like the iPhone and the next generation of Windows Media 6 and Windows Mobile 6, the fact is the matter is that these companies are going to have a hard time. RIM has a extremely broad base of followers, and that is based on one big issue, and that's the push email technology. If you take that and can then merge that into another company and maybe utilize a stable system like the Palm system, you have something that really can work. So the RIM Palm, if you think about it for a second, they're not totally competing, but the synergy there and the ability for them to come together, what a great idea. So who will buy who? I don't know. But if we do bring them together, great opportunity. No problems, so it seems, from antitrust issues. No problems from a competitive standpoint. They can really mold themselves together, bring it in, and have a tremendous accretion of overall value of earnings due to the fact that their expenses will be cut by probably half. There's some speculation for you. I hope it helps. Do some research, of course. Make sure that you know what you're doing, what you're talking about, and what you're getting yourself into if you happen to buy any of these. With that in mind, we're going to jump on over to the next and final topic of the day, which is this whole area of the real estate market. Let me say that the real estate market has been just an absolute, absolute disaster. Obviously, there was speculation was so high and so broad that there was this excitement exuded by so many people, and it fell down just flat on its face, just like it does when we get things overheated every single time. The NAHB came out with some numbers today showing that the real estate and housing market has been down significantly again. They expected a 33 on the housing market index. It was only 30. And one of the reasons is they talked about the subprime infection and the fact that the subprime markets or the loans that were made to people with lesser financial status that could not usually qualify for a traditional mortgage, and the fact that many of these companies just offered it to anyone at any level, caused a big problem in the overall mortgage market. And the overall mortgage market is really hurting now, and that has been bleeding over into the housing market. I think we're going to see a lot more here. Folks, do me a favor. Be very careful when it comes to real estate right now. It is not the time to jump in. Just because it's moved down one leg does not mean it's a great time to move back into this real estate market. There's a lot more to come in this area. The fact is we need to see the shakeout of the subprime. We saw that Accredited Home Investors, symbol LEND, today was also announcing a significant layoff. We've seen the continuation of problems when it comes to the companies like New Century Financial and even the concerns that we have with Countrywide. So I got to tell you, I would stay as far away from this area as I could right now because the infection is only going to spread further for the time being. Real estate is definitely on the no list and even the short list right now. So we had a full show today, folks. We talked about all sorts of things. I want to thank you for being with me today on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I hope that you are able to subscribe through either iTunes or any of the other areas that are available out there, whether it's Podcast Pickle or Podnova or anywhere else out there. And thank you for joining me. Spread the news to your friends. I hope that we can teach a little bit. We have a lot of great, great guests coming up and a lot of great commentary in the future. So thanks again for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz for the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.